Good evening and welcome to a featured artist special right here on the Artist First Radio Network. Richie K in the studio here, and tonight my guest is Gary Ault, whose latest release, Art of Survival, features such tracks as Valkyrie and Disappearing Mind. You're listening to a little bit of Valkyrie right now, and Gary's on the line with me. How are you, Gary?
Good, very good, thanks.
Thanks for joining us tonight on the Artist First Radio Network.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're going worldwide, so what's your first big hello to the world here today?
Well, I guess I'd say hello to Russia and China, because it seems like they do a lot of the listening, only because I seem like I get a lot of hits on my website after I do these interviews, so I think they're listening. So hello, Russia, or is it Stratsvitsia, Moskva, whatever.
Cool. Do you speak Russian?
No, that's about all I know. And Dasvidanya, I could say that at the end.
Dasvidanya. So, you've been playing music now for quite a while. This is our third interview, I believe, on the station. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Like I said, it's a great opportunity. I always enjoy it.
Well, we're going to get a chance to listen to quite a few of these songs tonight. What is your message with these songs, this latest release?
There's no real specific message. On previous releases, I had some sort of a theme typically, but with this one, it was just like I was collecting songs, and I just got to the point where I have to put something out because I have too many songs, you know. I actually had released an EP back in, I don't know, October last year, thinking that that was all I was going to do for a while, and I thought the next one will probably include all those six songs plus more. And, you know, I had various reasons for doing that, but with this one, I just thought, well, you know what, I got too many songs, I got to put something out, and I couldn't really include the six songs from the other one because it was too many, so I just included two. So there's no real theme, it's just whatever popped into my head at a particular moment in time.
So are you just always writing?
When I'm writing, I'm always writing, but I go through dry periods. I actually, since I released this one, I've been in a dry period for a couple of months. But, you know, if I have something to say, I mean, a lot of these are based on an experience or you know, a conversation I had with someone or just thinking about a particular person or whatever, you know, like finding a muse, if you will. Yeah, I mean, an idea can come from anywhere. It could be come from a drum beat or something I heard on the radio a little bit goofy or something, like I thought I heard it right, but it turns out I heard it wrong. you know, just an idea becomes a song. That's all there is to it.
Well, I think that's unique to the artist experience. Something, uh-huh. You know, I don't think everyone probably walks around and has a conversation and then says, oh, I'm going to write a song about that.
And I think you're probably right. And in fact, I never did before either. When I first started getting serious about songwriting, I was like struggling to always come up with a fresh idea. I'd, you know, take some Mozart sheet music and turn it upside down or just do all kinds of things to come up with something new and fresh. And it's very frustrating because it doesn't work that way. And I finally realized that if you force it, it's probably not going to happen or it won't happen right. You'll probably come up with something that just doesn't sound that good. At least that's what my experience always was. So I just don't really worry about it. Like I said, I've been in a dry period since, I don't know, January or February or something. And I'm not worried about it. I'm sure eventually I'll snap out of it. But when I'm writing, I'm writing.
I don't think that's all that unusual for artists. I've read, you know, if you get into any poets or anything, like Allen Ginsberg, I was reading him a while, and sometimes there were big gaps between, he would always date his poems. So, like, you would see big gaps between, you know, a couple months, you know, at a time between writing a single poem.
Mm-hmm.
So I can totally see where you kind of wait for the inspiration to hit.
Yeah, I think everybody's got a different philosophy. I was just reading, you know, I can't remember who it was, but a very successful songwriter, and the name escapes me, believe it or not, but he wrote a very intelligent essay on songwriting, and one of his points was that you should try to write a song, I don't know, one or two a week or whatever it was that he said. And I thought, well, that makes sense for him and for a lot of people, but it just doesn't work that way with me. I'm just so busy with all the other stuff I'm doing that if something doesn't come to me, I'm not worried about it. I find I write much better if I just allow it to happen naturally.
You mentioned Mozart earlier. Were you classically trained in any instruments?
To some extent. I started out as a drummer back when I was, I don't know, 8 or 9 or something years old. And, you know, of course, got into Ringo and later Ginger Baker and Buddy Rich and all those great guys. And then I started learning guitar, which basically meant to graduate from the Beatles to Clapton and Hendrix and all those guys. The classical training, if you want to call it that, would come in when I was around 13 or 14 or so. I had already listened to, you know, tons of Tchaikovsky and Chopin and all kinds of stuff. I always appreciated it, but my actual playing of it didn't start until I was around 13 or 14 when we got a piano, and I took lessons from a college kid. He was working his way through college. I mean, he's older than me. I shouldn't call him a kid, but, you know, he taught me a lot of Beethoven and Mozart and Kabalevsky and Bach and stuff like that. I wouldn't call it classical training in the sense that I went to Juilliard or something, but I spent about 3 years with those lessons, which taught me a lot about music in general. Like, it made me a better guitarist and that, because I was learning more about musical theory. But then the lessons kind of just stopped at one point, and I just sort of just, you know, continued on my own, basically. So I don't know if I'd ever call myself classically trained.
On the same vein, you mentioned some things. One of your songs has the title Bolero, Jimmy's Bolero.
Yeah.
And that seems to have a kind of classical reference.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's nothing classical about the song, but my first orchestral concert experience was seeing the Radio City Music Hall, Radio City Orchestra play Ravel's Bolero. And it was a tremendous experience for me. It was very exciting, you know, and I'll never forget it. And the only thing about Jimmy's Bolero, I don't know if you get to play it later, but it's really nothing like, you know, Ravel's Bolero. The only thing that kind of reminded me of it is the fact that it's sort of the theme continually repeats throughout, and it sort of builds. And that's, you know, Bolero has to do with a specific dance, which this song has nothing to do with. But so for that reason, I kind of ended it with the last chords of Ravel's Bolero. But it's really kind of a funk piece.
Yeah, it has a good beat, which you mentioned. Isn't Bolero a dance beat of sort?
Yeah, which has nothing to do with, you know, what this song's about, but, you know, it is what it is. And I just called it Jimmy's Bolero because I was thinking Jimi Hendrix. My favorite Hendrix period by far is his Band of Gypsies work, which was very, very funky. Not in the sense that this song is, but now we're going to have to play it because everybody's going to be curious about it.
I'm already starting it, okay. A little bit in the background. We're just going to listen to a little bit there while we're talking.
Okay.
But what is the actual, I guess you did say Jimi Hendrix and the beats there.
Yeah.
But, you know, what was the kind of motivating factor behind this song?
Actually, it was one of the last things I wrote this year. Back in January, we had a blackout, and, you know, the electricity went out because of, I guess, weather-related. I forget, was it an ice storm or something. And, you know, you take out the candles, and then you kind of stare at the wall for 5 hours with nothing to do. So I pulled out my acoustic guitar and sat in the kitchen and just sort of started monkeying around. And before you know it, I was just playing the chords. And all the song really is a bunch of chords. There's really no melody to it because it's a solo instrument going through the cycle. And then, you know, after the guitar is done, the sax keyboard takes over, and then the sax takes over, and then it goes back to guitar. So there's really no, you know, melodic theme to it.
That's kind of like a jazz structure.
Yeah. It's just an excuse to play, basically. So, but I had fun with it. I mean, I was just sitting there grooving on it, you know. And the problem with it is I typically, when I come up with an idea, I have to record it somehow, whether it's on a piece of paper or into my cell phone or on the computer or something, you know. And with this one, I thought the only way to really do it justice was to actually lay it down on a recorder, which I obviously didn't have access to due to the blackout. So I just kind of hoped that I'd remember it, and it turns out I did. Usually my ideas kind of, you know, flit away like a butterfly if I don't write them down right away.
And when you write down an idea, what kind of, do you just write the lyrics down? What helps it stick together for you?
It just depends what the seed is. It could be the lyric, or it could be a chord progression or drum beat or a melody. A lot of times it's a lyric and the melody, you know, like just 5 or 6 words that might be the title, and I'm just thinking, well, how would that sound? You know, how would those words make sense if sung? You know, you can take the same lyric, you could take Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and sing it like it was Strangers in the Night, and it would sound pretty stupid. So, you know, it's just how is this really going to work out? How's it going to sound? What's going to be the groove? So then I'll just write whatever I can. I mean, if, you know, writing it on paper, sometimes the idea gets a little bit lost in translation by the time you pick it up again and do a sanity check on it. But, you know, it just really depends upon the seed.
There's a really great sax solo on the song. Not to keep dwelling on this one song, but Jimmy's Bolero has a great sax part on it. Do you work with him often?
Well, actually, I got the except for the sax solo, all of it is native instruments. The sax is actually WAV files that I've been collecting over years, and I just kind of, kind of string them together some you know, whatever way I can. It's actually sometimes very hard to come up with enough material to fill the space. But apart from that, it's all me.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah.
So you're actually finding loops and things.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it is. It's loops that I string together. They're like, you know, typically maybe 5 seconds each, and then you just kind of had to find one that's in the same key, the same groove, the same tempo, same meter. I should probably go out and just learn how to play sax. It would probably be easier. Yeah.
Are the drums also that way on the album?
Some of them, but what I typically do is I'll use them. I use them at the very least for a click track. You know, once I determine what the rhythm and the tempo is going to be, and I'll just use, you know, whatever I can for a click track, just so I can lay down the instruments with that constant beat, and then I start replacing it at some point with the real drums. And a lot of times, probably more often than not nowadays, it ends up being WAV files. But I augment that with whatever else makes it happen. If I'm looking for a certain sound, like for instance, on a song we'll probably play later, I needed a ride beat, like a sizzler cymbal, you know, which is like a cymbal with some kind of metal piece, kind of like vibrating on it, so it gives it that kind of sound, you know, that kind of resonates.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't really find that anywhere exactly, so I just did the drums myself on that particular one. So it just depends. I mean, sometimes I use, I hardly ever do anymore, but I used to use the keyboard once in a while. I have a Roland keyboard, not a drum machine, but a regular piano keyboard that has a drum setting where, like, you know, the low A is a bass drum or whatever. And I use that if it's going to be a real pop kind of song, but I don't really think I did any of that on this one. I might have done that for some timbali sounds or something.
Oh, well, it's got a great groove to it. I really thought you had a whole band going there.
Yeah, I wish I did. I mean, you know, one of the things about the recording experience that I find a little bit daunting is that I think I play fairly emotionally if I'm playing with other people, and especially if I'm playing live in front of an audience. I never know what the heck is going to happen, and I'll do things that I didn't even know I could do. I'm like, where'd that come from? But when I'm playing into a tape recorder, it's a kind of a sterile experience, you know, and it's sort of like, yeah, you know, it's almost analytical in nature to some extent. So I have sometimes I have to struggle to remember that this is a cool song, you know, play with your heart here, you know, and just do it.
Tried to record a live show?
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's, you know, we don't have the equipment to really do it well. I mean, we put some YouTube videos out there that are almost kind of embarrassing. Through nobody's fault, not the band or the person taking the video, but just, you know, very limited microphone usage and stuff.
Right. I've been experimenting with that. We actually have a venue in Alliance, and we have a computer hooked up, and you can just take all the channels off the board, and we actually can record in 16 tracks, which is pretty good. I mean, we don't have a ton of money into it, but that actually, you know, you get the whole band then in the recording, and you can. It's kind of cool because it's a live recording too. So I just was wondering if you had got the chance. It is definitely something where, you know, opportunity has to meet the prepared mind and sort of, you know, to find those venues that might be doing something like that.
Right, but, right. Well, a number of years ago, I'm trying to remember, I guess maybe 8 or 10 years ago, we actually went into a studio, you know, like a 24-track studio as a band. I think we were probably a 6-piece band at that time, and they recorded. We did about 7 songs inside of 3 hours. It was really quick, but we did it all live, not one overdub, because we were really looking to make a demo to run around to different venues with it to get gigs. So we thought that was the most appropriate way to do it. And it actually worked out really beautifully because you're in a controlled setting. You got the microphone set up that you know, the right mics to use. Everybody's got cans on their head and stuff. And it worked out really beautifully. But as far as like an actual, you know, venue, yeah, you had a good experience, but I haven't been there yet to where you really got the equipment to make it happen.
Right. Well, you said we there just a second ago. Do you have a band you play out with?
Yeah, it's called Thunderhouse.
Okay.
And it's a 5-piece band right now. My son's in the band, actually, and then and his girlfriend is in the band, and we got a drummer and a bass player. And we play, you know, pretty much New York, New Jersey for the most part.
Any upcoming shows?
Yeah, we've got come, I think it's, I'm trying to remember. Is it July 16th? I can't remember exactly, but I think it's on my website. I should look it up right now. It's
GaryAlt.com?
Yeah.
Check it out there, everybody. GaryAlt.com.
Yeah, I think it's July 16th. I'll look it up really quick as we're talking, but we've got something else coming up, but it's like a private, like a house concert. That's coming up in June, I think. So,
well, you've got a song on the album called Dance.
Right.
And I know when you want people to dance, you got to tell them to dance.
Yes.
So this sounds like the song.
Okay.
That you got to play to get them to dance. And I was thinking, let's give them a chance to listen to it. And then they can come out to your show.
Okay.
And see what they expect. And we'll tell them when that show is as soon as we come back.
Okay.
All right, here's the song. It's called Dance off of Gary Alt's latest release. Check it out. We'll be right back. Everybody, we still got Gary on the line here. That was Dance from his latest release, Art of Survival. Check out GaryAlt.com. for more information about this great new artist. Gary, how many albums have you put out?
Depending on how you count them, I think this is my eighth.
Eight records.
Yeah.
And mostly doing this all on your own, right?
Yeah, for the most part. There was one album I did as a collaboration with a friend named Jason. But other people help me out plenty. I mean, I get singers all over the place helping me out because my voice is pretty, not that good. although I did sing on that last one. But
You sing on everything, don't you?
No, there's some that I, you know, I get. Jason sang on three of them, and I think Larry Hayden and Missy, our singer, sing on one of them. But pretty much the rest of them I did. What I do is I always sing at least the demo anyway. And then if I like it, I keep it. But if it just doesn't work, I got to do something serious. So I'll typically call Jason because he's such a good sport. I mean, he's got all the equipment in his house. All he has to do is find time in his own home and, send the WAV file via email. And I mix it in there. And it's like almost every time, the first time he nails it, it's just unbelievable. So it works out pretty well that way.
This is Jason Arvanites?
Yeah, Arvanites. Yeah, like Arvanites. Arthritis, yeah.
Arvanites like arthritis.
Yeah. That's what he says anyway.
I like it.
Yeah. And I do the same for him. You know, like he recently asked me to do a couple of guitar solos for him. And, you know, it's stuff that he could have done himself, but he just wanted a certain thing, I guess. And so it's just a matter of finding time, and I'm always happy to oblige.
So you're writing songs, and then you find some other musicians to play with you on some different tracks. And mm-hmm. mostly you're recording these at home? Or?
Yeah, at home, yeah, yeah. The only time I don't is if, once in a while I've gone to somebody's house with my equipment, or like I said, Jason does it in his house and sends me the WAV file, but pretty much I record at home. And it's all myself. I mean, I even played flute on one song. I just, it's just easier to do it myself than to find people that are going to cooperate and do it right, So
you play flute? What else do you play?
I don't play a lot of flute. I just picked it up years ago when my little sister started taking it in school band. I was probably like 12 or 13 years old, and if there's a musical instrument within 100 square miles of me, I got to find it and pick it up and do something with it. So can't say that I always do it well, but I did pick up a little bit of flute. I could play in this keys of C and F, I guess. I just had this one song that I needed a flute solo for, and the funny thing is that I couldn't find my daughter's flute. She had played it in school as well, and I couldn't find it anywhere. Scoured the house, turned it upside down. So I finally just put a message out on Facebook. I said, look, I need a flute. Anybody have a flute they can lend me? And inside of a minute, I got a message back from a friend named Vin. He said, yeah, my daughter's got a flute here that we haven't used in years. Come on over. And he's like 10 minutes away. So I zipped over there, picked it up. It took me a few days to kind of get back into practice with it. And, by the end of the week, I had a recording done. That was really, it was pretty cool. The joys of the internet.
So you've always had a love for music.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as back as I can remember.
And just if you could get a hold of an instrument, you'd play it. And have you always wanted to be an artist?
Probably. I mean, I think, when I was a kid listening to, the Monkees and whatever, all the Motown stuff I used to listen to and just anything that came over the AM radio. And then you see these people on the TV, whether it was Diana Ross or The Temptations or whoever it was, I just thought it was all so unbelievably cool, and I just had to do it. And
You mentioned Diana Ross. Is there some other great influences you've had?
Well, I discovered the Beatles when I was around 5 or 6. My older sister had a couple of their albums, and that was a huge, huge influence. And I eventually abandoned the Monkees and all that bubblegum crap. I shouldn't say it's crap because it has value, but I outgrew it. And eventually, I discovered Eric Clapton. That completely opened my eyes to a completely new world, because from that I started listening to Hendrix and John McLaughlin and everything. I just realized that there's a much, much bigger world than this top 40 pop stuff, and not that I don't listen to the Beatles anymore, because I listen to them a lot, but Clapton is by far been my biggest influence from my entire life.
We just had Davy Jones on Chit Chat Cafe not too long ago from the Monkees.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, I saw him on a TV show recently with his wife. I can't remember if it was a Dr. Phil thing. It's something I would never watch, but it was on at the barbershop or something.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. He seemed like a pretty regular guy.
Yeah, he got famous young, And he had this certain fame with the TV show. And, you know, yeah, it's lighthearted. It's maybe not as serious as some songs, you know, can be. But, you know, he touched a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. I mean, that's what got me started, really. I mean, like I said, I listened to anything AM, which, you know, initially was probably mostly Motown and, I don't know, whatever bubblegum was at that time. And by the time the Monkees came out, I'm thinking it was 65, 66, maybe, something like that. I don't know. But I was already, you know, maybe 8 or 9 years old, so I'd already listened to a lot of stuff. But that's my first memory of really thinking, wow, I want to do this.
Right.
You know, I mean, I used to watch the show all the time, which was kind of a Marx Brothers kind of a thing. But at the end of the show, I would always hope that they would play a song, like Last Train to Clarksville or something. And if they didn't, I was really, really disappointed. That to me was the highlight, watching those instruments, you know, and I even if it was not really happening. It was kind of looking at the Sears, like looking at the Sears catalog when I was a kid. I would just stare at that page that had the drums and the guitars and the amps,
yeah.
And I would just say, oh, man, I want that so bad. It took me years to get it, but
yeah. That's
what I wanted to do.
I remember the Superman ads from the Sears catalog for some reason. The when he has the lightning shooting out of his eyes or whatever, the heat vision.
Don't remember that.
I wanted that little outfit because it would make I thought I could get heat vision.
Oh yeah, okay. Imagine what you could do with that.
Well, anyway. I want to play some more of your music. I got a chance to listen to a few of these tracks, and another one that really caught my attention was one called Disappearing Mind.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's actually, I got the title. A lot of times I just write down titles, and I keep them in a notebook or something, and I think, yeah, one of these days I'll write something. And I was thinking of kind of a comedy piece about Alzheimer's disease. You know, yeah, my mind is disappearing, but yeah, I just didn't write anything. And then one day I had a conversation with somebody, which was a more serious conversation, about something that really pesters the heck out of me, is the propensity for people to espouse all kinds of socio-political doctrines as if their viewpoint is the only way to look at things. And I don't care if you're at the far left or the far right or somewhere in the middle. I hear it all the time, and I see it on Facebook and blogs all the time, where people assume that they're not only correct, but if you don't agree with them, you're stupid. I mean, that's just plain the way it is, you know. And I go to concerts, I pay $50 to hear somebody sing, and instead of hearing them sing, I got to hear them give some kind of a political speech, and I just really get tired of the whole thing, you know. So this conversation I had with someone, she basically said that that there's a certain amount of scientific evidence that people's brains are hardwired for extreme political, socio-political thought, left or right or whatever, you know. So they're almost predisposed to that kind of thing. So I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting thought, and I just don't write political things. I don't like, you know, I have certain ideas about social issues and things like that, but I don't like to write about them because it's just not my thing. I'm not trying to force my opinion down anybody's throat. And you know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. If you want to get an audience that's willing to buy your tickets, I just don't want to buy a ticket to a show like that. So I just wanted to write something that basically made the point that that people that think that they've got the answer, and especially if it's an extreme viewpoint, and they're convinced that this is the only way to look at it, and if you look at it from the other perspective, you're completely wrong and stupid. I think it's like their mind is going. You know, it's like think about what you're saying. I mean, it really doesn't make any sense. So I just wanted to write something that doesn't make a political statement. It's just making the statement that I don't want to hear your political viewpoint if you don't mind, you know, just shutting up for a minute. So anyway, that came out of that conversation, you know, which I actually was with a person who you know, has certain socio-political thoughts herself but just was not really sharing them at that particular point in time. So I thought, well, this is a mutually respectable conversation, and I'm just going to write about it. So that's what I did.
Well, I'm just going to shut up and play the song.
Okay, I'm done.
Here it is, Disappearing Mind from Gary Alt.
Thank you. the disappearing mind. Oh, it's all to the left, or all to the right. We're going down again. Echo of history's path. Same play, different cast. Einstein's just a little insane with the right to complain. Every fifth of a score, Messiah reels its head. We're only asking for more. And keep on our arms crawl, make our best for the world. For extreme, you assume all agree and ram your mind down my throat. At the cost of a friend, insanity has to end.
Hopefully your mind disappeared there and
you're feeling good. That's one great thing about music. I don't know. When I heard the title, I didn't really get what you were saying earlier, which we kind of left our audience hanging on this this note. But the idea of this kind of limited communication on the internet and things like that. But the whole title of Disappearing Mind, to me anyway, I kind of get the idea of the disappearing ego, or, you know, just sort of coming more to yourself and then finding that you are like all other people, which is sort of a spiritual thing.
Okay, we could take it that way, sure.
But yeah, for me anyway, and I'm sure you know, for a lot of people, like, music is a sort of interpretive thing. Sometimes lyrics are vague or purposefully so, or, you know, they just sort of lead you to or point to a place within your soul. Khalil Gibran, I read a long time ago, said that the poet is always trying to define his shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of think that the music is like that in a way, too. It's a kind of almost subconscious sort of thing that happens, like when you're watching a movie, the music there is describing the emotion of it, and people aren't even aware of that sometimes.
Right. Yeah, I think if they do it right, they aren't aware of it. You know, it's sort of in the background, but it's not. It's sort of adding to it without dominating.
So I think there's a lot to, you know, you can find in one song, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I'm always happy to know that somebody, you know, listened to something and thought, is this what you meant? Like, well, no, but it doesn't really matter. You know, like Robert Frost used to say, what does it mean to you? Which is not a cop-out. It's just, you know, because I don't like to write things that vaguely that you can interpret a million different ways, like it almost doesn't mean anything. I like to, you know, write, you know, a little bit specifically, but if you get something out of it that I didn't write, that's okay. You know, as long as it affected you in a positive way, it would kind of bum me out if I knew that somebody was, like, you know, in the throes of depression after having listened to something I did.
75 people,
yeah,
just killed themselves.
Yeah, I'd rather
Gary
not hear
Old
that.
Concert. Yeah, that's what I've always been afraid of that too, because sometimes you get into the darker things, you know, when you write.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe you're dealing with personal trauma, whatever, and it can be a form of therapy in a way to write. And sometimes, you know, it depends, I guess, how conscious you are of the writing process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why, like I said before, I haven't really written much since January or February, because, you know, if I'm not in the right frame of mind, then I can't think of anything positive to say, because my mind is just on so much, you know, so many problems and negative things. I don't want to write, you know. I mean, what you said about it being therapy is true, but, you know, I'll play then, you know. I'll just, like, take out an old John Mayall record and play it and just wail on my guitar to it, and that's kind of therapeutic. But to write from, like, a dark space about, you know, I mean, I guess with the song you talked about playing next, Scared, it's a pretty introspective song, which I guess you can probably describe as a downer, but it was actually the last song I wrote when I started this latest funk, I guess. But, you know, yeah, pretty much I like to stay away from forcing something out that's going to be dark and depressing. And, you know, I just don't want to do that. I don't think anybody should be subjected to that just because I'm in a crappy mood, you know.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I also have the kind of viewpoint that might be where other people are at. And
yeah, and
it might
I
help describe the experience.
Yeah, no, I respect it. I mean, you know, I remember listening to an old Rick Derringer song, Jump, 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 and it's all about suicide, for Pete's sake. Or Lucinda Williams wrote a great song about suicide called, not Beautiful World, what the heck was it called? Sweet Old World. And it's beautiful. I mean, I'll listen to that 100 times a day. I just love it. But so I don't object. And if you want to write about, you know, Woody Guthrie writes about, you know, striking unions and stuff like that, that's fine. I'm not saying, like, you know, don't ever do that. But for me personally, I just don't want to write that stuff. It just, because I don't think it's going to come out well. And I feel like I'd be, like, wearing my heart on my sleeve and just, you know, people would be like, what the heck? You know, I really don't want to hear this, you know. So therefore, I don't want to write it and I don't want to sing it. So that's just my personal preference.
Do you go through any like editing process, you know, from the start of an idea for a song to the end?
Well, I can tell you what I try to do, and I don't know that I always do this, and it comes from actually some sessions I went through with the Songwriters Guild of America out in Nashville some years ago. What I try to do is let the right brain take over. Just if you have a creative thought, just write it down or play it or record it in some whatever fashion you can, and don't worry about it. Don't let the left brain policeman take over and start telling you that was stupid. Don't, you know, what are you doing an E-flat minor there for? That was dumb, you know. Or those lyrics don't make any sense, they don't flow. Don't worry about it. Just write. Because at some point you're going to revisit it and, you know, pick it up and say, and say, well, wait, hold on a minute. What was I thinking when I wrote this down? This doesn't make sense. Let me change this or that. That's the ideal. But I can't really say I do that all the time. I think more often than not it's kind of, the initial inspiration is very much a creative process. It's a complete right brain thing. It's not like I'm thinking, oh, you know, what can I do here to sound different, you know. But when I'm actually writing, especially lyrics, I'm kind of doing maybe 50% inspiration, 50% analytical kind of thing, which is probably not healthy. It probably should be like 100% inspirational, and then let the analysis look at it the following day when you wake up or something. But I think in the end, once I'm done with the song, what I typically do is I have several friends that I'll run stuff by. Like I'll try to record some sort of a demo. It's reasonably decent, and I'll send it to them. And I don't do it so much anymore because I feel like I'm kind of burdening them with a lot of slop. But because sometimes I just write too much stuff, and it's like, you know, it's just not reasonable to expect people to be able to listen to this stuff. But I'll just kind of leave it to them to say, you know, should I even continue doing this, or does this make sense, you know? And by the time I'm done with all the criticism that I get, and I kind of take what they say and weigh it, because everybody says something a little bit differently, and I feel differently than that. And by the time I get done, I finish it, and it's, I don't know, it is what it is. I mean, maybe it's crazy. I don't know, maybe I should change it or whatever, but I typically, when I'm done recording it, it's like, that's pretty much it. I very rarely change something at that point.
Yeah, are you seeking, when you're writing to convey, a certain feeling, and then look for it, or is it just kind of arises?
I tell you, it's probably half and half, you know, depending upon the situation. But I think more often than not, I am looking to, like with that first song, you only played a little bit of it, Valkyrie. I just think that's a really cool, you know, hard rocking kind of a driving beat. And I was definitely looking for, because it's sort of, you know, relatively dark lyrically, and I was definitely looking for something that was going to convey that, you know, driving down Route 95, 100 miles an hour kind of a thing where you're just almost exploding out of your skin. I don't know if I achieved it or not, but I'm thinking, okay, what can I add to this to make that really happen, like in terms of the drums or the guitars or whatever. But it doesn't always work that way, because I find that songs typically take on a life of their own. You know, I might start, like with the one you just played, Disappearing Mind, I was really trying hard to stay away from a Led Zeppelin kind of, I think, what was the name of the song, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, I think? I forget which one it is, but I was almost like getting it confused as I was playing it when I started writing it. I said, I don't want to be derivative here, you know, let me get away from this. And I don't know, at some point during the writing or the recording or something, it just becomes unrecognizable as the song that you thought it sounded like, and it takes on a life of its own, and it becomes something different. So that's why I don't really worry about, oh, geez, I should search the internet and see if anybody ever wrote a song called Disappearing Mind, and maybe I should, I don't know, check the Library of Congress records to see if there's a song like this. I don't worry about it. It's just because, like I said, every song takes on a life of its own and ends up sounding a lot different than I had intended anyway.
I think you're a creator, so you know you see the the moment of creation. You know, it could be anything, and when you do it, you've just gotta do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned Valkyrie. You were trying to establish a few ideas. This driving down the road kind of feeling of, kind of busting out of your skin, I think you said.
Yeah.
I felt that, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, I could hear it in the music. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to get a description like that.
Yeah, just something that you like. Sometimes I'll even imagine an audience, whether it's one particular person or a whole audience full of people, and I just think, like, how would they be, like, you know, going to the bar to get another beer, or, you know, use the men's room, or would they be just sitting there like, wow, this is so cool, you know? And I'm obviously trying to go for the better reaction. And you don't know what it's going to be. I mean, you know, there's songs that, like, I think the next one I asked you to play, Kimberly, I thought, you know, it is what it is. It's a little pop thing with a lot of lyrical content. It was a fun song to do, and I'm happy with it. And I played it for some friends of mine. They're like, holy mackerel, you got to promote this as a single. This is great. You know, I'm like, really? Wow. I mean, I don't know. So it's kind of hard to evaluate your own stuff sometimes.
I really liked it. It reminded me of the Beatles, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of had that descending melody.
Yeah.
It kind of was a little happy, but kind of creepy at the same time.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Let's take a listen to it right now.
Okay.
This is Kimberly, GaryAlt.com. You can find out more information about Gary and all of his 8 releases that he's got on CD. So check it out. We'll be right back.
That was Kimberly from Gary Alt's latest release, Art of Survival. Check it out at GaryAlt.com.
Gary, how you doing?
Just great.
Yeah, we were just talking off the air a little bit about some of the hook elements in that song, which you said that back in the day you got a little bit of training in writing hooks, but you don't really think about writing a hook.
Right. I mean, I remember listening to John Fogerty, for example, a lot, and he has almost like a country musician approach to it, where it's like the song is very simple, and the hook is really just in this, like, two notes on the guitar or whatever. You know, it's just like hardly anything going on. It's like, keep it simple, and it'll work, you know. And I learned that from different seminars I've been to, that a lot of times it's just a three-chord song, but you just have this little, I don't know, little pedal steel thing going on or whatever it is that provides the hook. So, and in that particular song, I guess it's the descending melody with the upper harmony staying on the same note and, you know, a couple of different things.
Yeah, it's got a great little, it's just a song that I think a lot of people could just kind of tap their foot to. And
that's what I was really going for. As I was explaining during the song, it just had this triplet thing going on where it's Kimberly, what are the lyrics? Can you see, Kimberly, can you see? It's just three notes at a time, Kimberly, Kimberly. But it's over a 4-4 rhythm, so it's kind of like a contrast. And I didn't want to make any complicated lyrics because I wanted to just concentrate on the sound of the triplets over the 4-4 thing. And then there was like a certain muse I had in mind. There's actually no Kimberly. I mean, I almost kind of made it up, and, you know, if there was a Kimberly, she's gone or whatever. But there's actually nobody that with that name. But, you know, it just came out, you know.
We've got time for one more song, and it's got a great title for the end of our show. But before we go, who in the world would you like to say hello to? And any final thoughts before we go?
Final thought. Well, you want me to tell you about this particular song, or?
You could tell us about this song, or just we're going to wrap it up. So that song will be playing on the way out.
Okay.
And thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Oh, okay, thanks.
And, tell us anything, a message for the world or upcoming artists.
I would say keep playing music, folks. If that's what you're doing, just keep doing it, and don't worry about whether people like it or not. Just keep playing. You might never make a nickel doing it, or you might make $1 million, but keep doing it because you love it.
And that's the best reason of all.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Gary, for joining us. We'll give him Won't Stop the Song.
Okay.
Now, it's going to keep going, even while we're gone.
So it won't stop.
So it won't stop. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow, there's something mysterious about that. I guess I wasn't thinking when I wrote it.
We'll be gone, but the song will go on.
Okay.
Take care, Gary.
Okay,
thanks
for
joining us.
Bye-bye.
Just a couple of miles from home, the radio won't leave me alone. A slamming door is fresh in my heart, and I'm about to deal the same card. You turn around and head back to you. A real goodbye, the least I can do. Your open arms said I was wrong to think the end would do you no harm. won't stop the song. It started singing in my heart. No, I won't stop the song. No, I won't stop the song. Won't stop the song.